ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भाम् व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्ताम् वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयम् करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादम् शङ्करम् लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करम् शङ्कराचार्यम् केशवम् बादरायणम् सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। लास्ट् क्लास् वि सा वन्स् वि नो the value of the knowledge of the self, if we understand knowledge of the self is in fact the knowledge of the truth or the reality of the universe, and knowledge of the reality is the knowledge of what happiness is. And happiness is our choiceless end. Naturally, we become committed to the pursuit of knowledge. Knowing the end very clearly, knowing the end being moksha, and knowing that knowledge being the only means of accomplishing that end, and knowing that knowledge of the self and discovery of happiness are identical, they're one and the same, we become committed to the pursuit of the knowledge. And once we become committed to the pursuit of knowledge, we are jignyasus. Jignyasuhu is a word which means the one who is desirous of knowing. And here, the one who is desirous of knowing the truth, knowing the reality, is said to be jignyasuhu. Once we become committed to the pursuit of knowledge, then we think how to know the truth. As I said, the truth has to be known only as the self. And to know the self, you need a means of knowledge. Because without knowing, without the means of knowledge, no knowledge is possible. So we do require definitely a means of knowledge. And we saw also last class, even though we use our own sense organs as means of knowledge of the external world, here the external world is known in five different forms as five different objects through five different sense organs as form, color, light, taste, touch, etc. When the object to be known is different from you, the knower, you can use any of the sense organs. You can use these sense organs as means of knowledge. But But when you have to know who you are, because knowing what I am is knowing what the truth is. You need to know the very substance of the substantive I. When I say the wave, wave is a substantive and the substance of the word. Substantive wave is water. So content, the essence of the wave is water. Similarly, what is the substance of the substantive I, the first person singular pronoun? We need to know the content of I. If you know the truth of I, the content of I, you know the truth of the everything in this universe. But what is to be? You are the knower, and one who is to be known, that which is to be known happens to be very you. The subject knower itself is the object of knowledge. If the object is different from the knower, any other means of knowledge can be used. But the subject itself happens to be the object of knowledge. You need an external means of knowledge. And here I said, the only external means of knowledge for this, for self-knowledge, is the Shastram, the scripture we saw last class. Now I told you, the scripture means Veda Anta Shastram, the end portion of the Veda serves as a means of knowledge of the self, which means the study of the Veda Anta Shastram serves as means of knowledge of the self. I told you this also. The Veda Anta Shastram means nothing but Upanishads. We have many small texts called Upanishads. Upanishad is a singular word. Upanishadaha, Upanishads, is a plural word. And we have Upanishads, many Upanishads, which constitute the end portion of the Veda called Veda Anta Shastram. And Upanishads are Veda Anta Shastram, otherwise called Jnana Kandaha of the Veda, serves as a means of knowledge. I also told last class, the study of the Upanishads will bless you with the knowledge, which means without making use of the Shastram, without studying the Shastram, without understanding the subject matter of the Vedanta Shastram, the Upanishads, we cannot blindly say, it does not serve as a means of knowledge. I will not trust, I will not believe, we cannot say. To disprove or to prove, to do anything, we need to make use of it to know whether it works or not. And then I said, therefore, Shastram is available and the Shastram has been studied with the help of a teacher. One cannot study the scripture by oneself because the words of the Shastram needs proper unfoldment. Only then they can reveal the reality, the vastu. Because what is to be understood by us, even though happens to be the very self, the I, the meaning of the word I, the content of I, it is still the subtlest reality Hence, the Shastra's words need to be unfolded carefully, handled carefully, and for which the person, those words need to be unfolded by the teacher, which means one has to study scripture with the help of the teacher, and who knows the method of unfoldment called Sampradayaha. And for the teacher to know the method of unfoldment or the traditional teaching methodology, the person who teaches must have been a disciple or a student of another teacher, who would have been a disciple of another teacher. What does it mean? If one studied under a teacher who would have been a disciple of another teacher, which means then the teacher can know the method of unfoldment. Only by being a student, one can pick up the very method of unfoldment. Teaching methodology one can pick up. Therefore, the Shastram is available. The teacher also is available, means, and here Shastra makes it very clear that one has to study the Shastram systematically. Because the mere study will not bless one with the knowledge. One has to study systematically, regularly, consistently, continuously, constantly, with the help of a competent teacher for a given length of time. It's very important. Listening to this, don't get frightened. Okay? It's not difficult. If you are with us, you can see how it works. The teaching involves three steps here. The whole teaching involves three steps, which means the clear knowledge, which itself is moksha. The knowledge itself is moksha, freedom, which is happiness. That knowledge is a doubt-free, ascertained, assimilated, clear vision of the reality as the self, which itself is moksha. That is, that such knowledge is dependent on three steps. We mean that there's a three steps are involved in teaching. The study involves three steps. The first stage of study is called Shravanam. The second level of study is called Mananam. The third level of the third stage is called Nididhyasanam. I use three words, remember carefully: Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam. I'll repeat again: Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. Shravanam means listening to the teaching regularly, systematically. I explained last class what is a systematic study. Hope you remember that. For a length of time with the help of the teacher. And before the exposure to the study, you wouldn't have known anything. And this exposure to the study will give you some knowledge, definitely. It removes certain vagueness and ignorance. Definitely, you can't say you do not know anything at all after having done Shravanam. Definitely, you know, you have knowledge. But that knowledge will be, knowledge will be there, but doubts also will be there. After having done the first step of learning, study, still there will be doubts and queries. After Shravanam, you cannot say you are totally ignorant of what you have understood. You have understood, you would have understood so many things, but still there will be lot of doubts, and still there will be, you can see certain vaguenesses. Because only when you start listening to this Shastram, your mind becomes subtle and sharper, and because of your subtleness of the mind, new queries will come. Before you start listening to Shastram, you would not have had these doubts at all. You are simply ignorant. But after you start listening, the more you understand, the more you listen, as the clarity enhances, then mind becomes subtler. The gross mind really becomes subtler. As the mind becomes subtler, the new doubts also will arise. I tell you, that means Shravanam will bless you with the knowledge, but still it will be a doubtful knowledge. You have moved on from utter ignorance to the doubtful knowledge. So doubtful knowledge is not ignorance, but doubtful knowledge is as good as ignorance, which means it does not serve the purpose. Doubts have to be resolved, for which the next step is prescribed, which called mananam. What is mananam? Mananam means repeatedly thinking of what has been heard during Shravanam and understood and retained. You have, during Shravanam, you listen, you listen, you listen, you understand, you listen, you understand, you listen, you understand, you retain. You have heard and you have understood, you have retained, but still doubts are there. Now, manana means you reflect on, so reflect on what you have heard during Shravanam and what you have understood and what you have retained. You know, reflecting on what you have heard, written and understood repeatedly will help you resolve the doubts. So mananam, the reflecting on what you have heard and understood continuously for a length of time will slowly resolve all your doubts. It can be even repeated listening also. Repeated listening also is a sort of reflection only. When, so this one, mananam will result in clear, doubtless, doubt-free knowledge. So Shravanam takes you from ignorance to knowledge with the doubts. You are not totally ignorant. Mananam will help you resolve the doubts. Mananam will lead you from doubtful knowledge to doubt-free clear knowledge of the self. In fact, mananam itself is enough, you can say. Even after having done mananam, after having got the clear knowledge of the self being the only reality of the universe, sometimes you will see the problem of this smallness centered on I. The sense of inadequacy centered on I, and this the other problems caused by this fundamental problem, other emotions, the emotional problems, they all still continue to be there. Because from childhood onwards, we have been having lots of emotional problems. It's not one human being. I'm talking about the humanity as a whole, in general. It is very natural for any human being to have lots of emotional problems, such as small things like anger, jealousy, hatred. You know, people come and tell me, naturally, I'm very angry, and all those things. Like, these things still will be there. So emotional problems which you have been having, and also for many janmas, for many lives, we have been having this strong essence in the physical body, mind, sense complex. Because of our old habits also, long orientation also, our problems continue to be there. It seems now, one side I am very clear, I have very clear knowledge of the self, but still my problems have not yet been resolved. Because Shastram says, knowledge itself is freedom. I did Shravanam, I had knowledge. I had doubts also. I did Mananam, I have resolved my doubts. I am very clear. But still, clear knowledge, what is the use of having clear knowledge? Still having the same old problems. The knowledge has not sorted out my problems. That is why Shastram prescribes a third step called Nididhyasanam. Nididhyasanam means contemplation. Contemplation means meditation. Meditation on what? Contemplation is meditation. But meditation is not contemplation. This I'll explain to you again later on. Don't worry. Contemplation is called Nididhyasanam, the third step. It is a meditation. But you should be very careful. Meditation on what? Meditation of what? Here, the meditation is not on anything. Meditation is constantly, continuously reminding yourself of the fact which you have understood clearly through Shravanam and Mananam. Okay? Constantly reminding yourself of the fact which you have understood clearly, doubtlessly, through Shravanam and Mananam. After Mananam, what is your clear knowledge? What must be the clear knowledge? I, the Self, am the reality of the universe. This is a fact. Like any wave, imagine, which happens to know the truth of itself being water, can have this vision. I, the wave, am the water, the truth of the entire ocean. Similarly, after Shravanam and Mananam, definitely this knowledge must be there. I, the Self, am the truth of the entire universe. This vision is a fact. It is not a cock and bull story. It is a fact. It is a verifiable fact. It is not a matter for belief. It is a fact to be understood. Like how any facts in mathematics or physics, the facts any fact has to be understood. This is also a fact, and this fact has to be understood. So the Shravanam and Mananam will bless you with what? A clear, doubt-free, understanding of this fact. But even though we understand the fact, sometimes even clear what we understood clearly also we tend to forget. We may forget the knowledge. So forgotten knowledge also is what now as good as ignorance only. It won't help. So this clear knowledge which has been gained should become unforgettable, ingrained, assimilated vision, for which you have to continuously remember that fact, which means focusing the attention or constantly dwelling upon the fact about the self, which one has understood clearly through Shravanam and Mananam, is called meditation here. That is the contemplation. Meditation on the meditation means what? Constantly focusing one's attention on, constantly dwelling upon the fact one has understood through Shravanam and Mananam, thereby making that understanding, the vision, unflinching, making the understanding ascertained, unforgettable, is called Nididhyasanam. Once the vision becomes unforgettable, doubtless knowledge, unforgettable knowledge, ascertained knowledge, then you are free, which means all the emotional problems or the habit caused problems, all those problems also can be resolved. That ascertained vision alone is called Jnana Nishtha, which is the Mokshaha. Jnana Nishtha means what now? Remaining steadfast in the vision of the truth of the universe as oneself. This clear vision which is possible. And that vision is what? Mokshaha, freedom. It is this vision you gain. It is this vision means, it is this doubt-free, ascertained and unforgettable knowledge of the truth being one and the same, and the truth being the self being the only truth of the whole universe. That knowledge alone is what we say is the greatest accomplishment. There is no greater accomplishment than the self-knowledge. Doesn't matter what you have achieved in life, what you have not achieved in life. It is this accomplishment of self-knowledge. You cannot accomplish the truth in life. You cannot accomplish the self, because already you are the truth, already you are happiness, already you are the self. How can you reach yourself? What you accomplish here is not the self, not the truth, not the reality. What you accomplish is the knowledge of the self. And this is a real absolute end, absolute achievement. There is no greater achievement. There cannot be any other greater achievement in a human life than accomplishing the knowledge of the self. You know why? It is this knowledge. It is this knowledge alone. It is only this knowledge will resolve all your problems for good. That is why we call this absolute knowledge, and the self knowledge is the one who, the self knowledge is said to be the absolute wisdom also. The absolutely wise is the one who has this self-knowledge. Anyway, these are the three steps involved. And the last class, I said, okay, we have got this Shastram, the scripture. We also have the teacher who is teaching. But still, this knowledge also will be possible only if we are adequately qualified for this knowledge. And I used two terms last class. Antahkarana Shuddhihi or Chitta Shuddhihi or Chitta and Chitta Naischalyam. Shuddhihi means purity. Naischalyam means steadiness. So mental purity and mental steadiness are the qualifications required for this knowledge. In fact, the Shastram says, it is very easy to gain self-knowledge. It is not at all difficult. It is very, very easy to attain moksha. Not at all difficult. But what involves difficulty is the accomplishment of the qualification required for knowledge. Which means the mental preparedness or readiness required for knowledge alone involves little difficulty. When I say difficulty, immediately don't get frightened. My God, does it involve difficulty? The word difficult should not come in the dictionary. When I say difficulty, relatively it is difficult. That's all. But even then, Shastram gives us the method, you know, how to acquire that qualification. Even though it is difficult to accomplish that qualification in terms of mental purity and steadiness, Shastram prescribes a lifestyle. If we follow, understand that lifestyle, and if we live that lifestyle with effortlessly, without any difficulty, comfortably, we can become qualified for knowledge. We can, without any difficulty, we can have gain this self-knowledge. We can really make our lives a complete and meaningful, successful life. So I said, Shastram prescribes a lifestyle called Karma Yoga lifestyle. This is what last class I introduced. Living a life of Karma Yoga is the only means. There is no shortcut method for preparing one's mind for knowledge. People talk about meditation and so many things. It is very important for one, for any meditative technique to be effective, for even Shastra study to be effective, it is very important for one to follow this lifestyle. Living a life of Karma Yoga means living a life in harmony with universal natural law and order. Living a life in harmony with the universal natural law and order means living a life without disturbing the universal law and order. If we disturb the order, we will be disturbed by the order. If we rub against the law and order, we'll be rubbed by the law and order. You can't help it. Because that is the law. It's like saying, if there is a fire, and as a child you may not know, you go and touch the fire, no, what will the fire do? Will burn your finger. Why? Burning the finger is not the action deliberately done by the fire. It is the very nature of the fire. If you touch the fire, it will burn your finger. You can carefully handle it. It will be very useful. Very, very useful. You can use it carefully, can handle, if you handle it. If you touch it, it will burn. That's the very nature of the fire. Similarly, if you live your life in harmony with the universal law and order, you are not disturbing the universal law and order. If you are in tune with the universal natural law and order, then you can enjoy it, you can use this. Otherwise, if you rub the order, you will be rubbed by the order, because that is the nature of the order. That is why we call it dharmaha. You understand it, little extended meaning of the word dharma. If you live a life in conformity with dharma, then you can enjoy the grace of dharma. You can see how dharma does wonders in life. If you rub against the dharma, dharma will rub you back. That is the nature of dharma. Okay, imagine this fire example is the best thing. Swamiji always gives this example. In Indian villages, when people walk, sometimes in summer, it gets very hot. So people know in villages, they remove the shirt and they walk, you know, with the bare back, they'll be walking, putting this shirt on the shoulder, they'll be walking, just. And on the way, if they find some of the trees on the way, and they'll stay under the shade for some time, because it's very hot, so they stay under the tree for some time, and then they had to get up and walk again. Sometimes one or two people know, it's very hot sun in summer, they may have small boils also at the back, then they may feel some itching. Then what they do, just they can't rub, no? So immediately they go to the bark of the tree and slowly they'll rub their back to the bark of the tree. And when they rub their back to the bark of the tree, initially it'd be very nice, comforting, very, very comfortable, because the itching goes. Initially, it itching goes. And after some time, when because it's nice, no? When they start rubbing, it's very nice. And as they rub against the bark, what happens? Slowly, the tree bark starts rubbing their back. Then what? The skin goes, or some wound comes, then it starts really, they feel that irritation, you know. Then they'll read, there's a burning sensation. And they will say what? The tree has rubbed my back. In fact, tree has not rubbed their back. This person goes to the tree and he puts his back against the tree's bark and he rubs against that in the bargain, as a result of which he has been rubbed by the tree. This is how dharma works. If we rub against dharma, dharma will rub you back. Which means you have no choice. You cannot escape. That is how the law and order works. This can be accepted universally. Anyway, so this is Karma Yoga lifestyle. Means living a life in conformity with dharma. I told you last class, what is that which makes the life a life of Karma Yoga? In life, performance of actions are inevitable. We have no choice. No choice means we can no choice about doing the actions. From once you get up in the morning, from morning until you fall asleep in the night, what we are doing is nothing but action, action, action only. The whole day we are doing actions. Day after day, day by day we are performing actions. Until the last breath we are doing actions. Even the person who is in the deathbed, who is not moving, the breathing is action still. Even though it's involuntary, still there are certain things that are happening. Therefore, living a life means performing actions. We have no choice about performing actions. And here, but how to convert this life of actions into a life of karma, into a life of Karma Yoga? I taught you last class the meaning of the word yoga. Anything which prepares your mind for knowledge, anything which helps you to purify your mind, calm your mind, is called yoga. Therefore, even your own day-to-day activities can serve as means for preparing your mind for knowledge. Therefore, the main thing is, it is very important for one to live a life of dharma. Without living a life of dharma, there is no karma yoga. It is very easy and simple. Not only for moksha and jnanam, even for artha kamas, even to accomplish anything in life, you need the grace. I'll talk about Ishvara definitely, though not in this class, next class. It is very important for us to tap grace, the Lord, grace of the Lord. Without grace, nothing can be accomplished. You need, of course, everyone has to, you know, put a lot of effort. We have to make appropriate efforts, adequate efforts. Appropriate, adequate efforts are very important to accomplish any end. Without our efforts, definitely we cannot achieve anything in life. But mere efforts alone are not enough. It is very important for us to know. Without efforts, our own adequate, appropriate efforts, we cannot accomplish anything in life. But mere our efforts alone are not enough for accomplishing any end. Anything you want to achieve in life, our efforts are not enough, means our efforts have to be supported by the grace. We need effort plus grace is equal to success. Effort plus grace is equal to accomplishment, achievement. So how to have grace? I can only put in my efforts, but how to have grace? Grace, whose grace? Anugraha, beautiful word. Bhagavan's grace. Ishvara anugraha. You know, the grace of the Lord. You cannot see the grace walking through you, to you, in having a form. No, we can understand grace being manifest in our lives. I'll talk about the grace later on again in detail. We're going to see later on. But now I wanted to introduce this word grace today. We need grace. Anugraha. Anugrahena vina kimapina siddhyati. Without Bhagavan's grace, nothing can be achieved. Without effort, you cannot have Bhagavan's grace. That's another thing. But when you make efforts, if you want grace also, all that you need to do is, you have to, your actions must be in conformity with universal natural law and order. The only way you can tap Bhagavan's grace. So if my actions have to be in conformity with universal natural law and order, means your actions must be in conformity with the universal values. Actions must be in conformity with universal values means you know how others should behave with you. You know what is right and what is wrong. So if your actions are in conformity with, in keeping with your own knowledge of right and wrong, your actions are in conformity with the values. If your actions are in conformity with values, your actions are in conformity with universal law and order. And in order to choose to do what is right and to deliberately, you know, to refrain from what is wrong. You are also blessed with the willpower, the capacity to choose to do a given action. You have the willpower. So everyone has to use one's knowledge of right and wrong, one's knowledge of will, one's willpower also one has to use to do the right, to refrain from the wrong. This is the only way you can have tap grace. You can try in your life. Okay, therefore living a life of values is the first thing, very important, without which you cannot convert your action into yoga. It's the first thing, because living a life karma yoga means completely all your actions are governed by dharma. The whole life becomes governed by dharma, your knowledge of right and wrong. Therefore, you become choicelessly, naturally you become an ethical person. If your actions are governed by knowledge of right and wrong, you are an ethical person. And then the next question comes, I know the value. This is where you understand the value of dharma. Until now, you understood, being exposed to these classes, you understood what your ultimate end is. You understood your end being choiceless end, moksha. And moksha is nothing but discovery of happiness which is already there. And for which the only way is you need to know the truth. And truth of the universe is known only as the self. Therefore self-knowledge is accomplishment of moksha. And self or self-knowledge you need shastram and the teacher. And the teacher and shastram are there, but still I need to prepare myself for what is knowledge. Because without preparedness, knowledge is impossible. And for preparing my mind for knowledge, I had no choice. But now, I had to live a life of dharma. Mental preparedness, mental purity, no mental state is impossible if we do not recognize this fact. It is a fact. We have to, this is how you become really more alertful person. Because nowadays what is not really valued is dharma. And this is where we understand the value of values. The value of living a life of values. The value of living a life of dharma. Once you know the value of values and you make all possible efforts to live a life of dharma, then the question might come, I know the value of values, I know the values also, I try my best to live a life of dharma, but I'm living in a society where it is very, very difficult to follow dharma. If I have to, sometimes I am placed in a situation where I am cornered to go against dharma also. What choice do I have? In spite of knowing the value of values, I am not able to follow dharma. What can I do? You know, the person who knows the value of dharma, it's very difficult for him to go against dharma. But there are situations, very challenging situations, where it may be difficult for you to follow dharma. That is where you need to have tremendous emotional strength, you know, to just go by dharma, to live a life of dharma. In any situation, I will live a life of values. I will not compromise with dharma for anything in the world. I can compromise anything else for dharma, but I will not compromise dharma, could be dharma for anything else. Which means my commitment to live a life of dharma must be such that I will not compromise for anything, dharma for anything. Which means for one to have hachet strength, emotional strength, again, you need grace. Okay? to be able to live a life of values, knowing the value of values, in order to live a life of values, also you need strength, and for which strength also you need to tap Bhagavan's grace, Ishvara's grace, the grace of the Lord. This is where you become humble and you can seek help, and seeking help is what? No, praying. Very important for a karma yogi to be prayerful. Okay, this is how you bring in Ishvara in your life. Once you live a life of dharma, means you are conscious of the Lord in the form of order all the time. And you pray, O Lord, please bless me with the knowledge of right and wrong. Please bless me with the knowledge and strength to choose to do the right, to avoid the wrong. O Lord, please bless me with the knowledge of what I can change, what I cannot. Please bless me with the knowledge and strength to change what I can, to accept gracefully what I cannot. This is the most exalted prayer. Please bless me with the vision of the truth. Please, in the form of the truth of myself. This prayer is very important. Initially, you need to be highly prayerful because you need strength. You are a weakling. You need strength. And this prayer, with this, it's an intense, fervent prayer. This prayer, with your commitment to live a life of dharma, will bless you with all the strength you require to live a life of dharma. You start doing this prayer. You tell me after some time how you feel. This prayer must not simply make, no, not lip sympathy. It must be really intense. It must be fervent prayer. This is very important for every seeker of truth. Initially must be highly, highly prayerful. It is very important to pray. Because we are helpless. Not that we want to do wrong things. Unknowingly, sometimes we may go wrong. In spite of our knowledge of right and wrong, in spite of our knowledge of value of values, in spite of our effort to commit ourselves to live a life of dharma, still we may go wrong sometimes unknowingly or helplessly or because of the situations may cannot to go. Therefore, we may need that strength and clarity. Therefore, intense fervent prayer is very, very important, and this is a very good prayer. In fact, I tell you this, this is the exalted prayer. This prayer in due course of time will put an end to the very act of praying. That is why I tell you this is an exalted prayer. And not only that, so this, as a prayerful person, you become much subtler minded. See, commit living, when once you live a life of dharma, you are very alert. Slowly you become alert. You become more conscious person, a more alert person. As an alertful, conscious person, your mind becomes much subtler and sharper. See, intellectual sharpness can be obtained only by living a life of dharma. How sharp you are, because how alert you are, you know, how sensitive you are, that depends upon what? How consciously you are doing your actions. So, you are a prayerful person. And prayer also really gives you tremendous energy. You, because the mental, emotional well-being, emotionally you are looked after very well, you know, because of the grace. The prayerful mind is always really, the highly prayerful mind is well looked after mind. So emotionally also you feel supported, so that your physical health also is taken care of. Really. You can avoid the psychosomatic disease illnesses. The prayer is the whole, that you can avoid becoming mad also. Sometimes we go, the depressions, dejections, all sorts of problems can be sorted out only by intense prayers. Tell you. Really, any amount of depression, dejection can be managed. I'm not saying it is difficult, it is not possible to have depressions. It is very natural to be depressed, become depressed. But when you don't know how to handle it, it worsens the situation. So to only avoid it, be prayerful. Which means you should have the faith in prayer. You should so know how prayer is effective. Prayer is 100% efficacious. Highly effective, you should know the secret. It is not a mad, it is not a foolish act actually. It's a very intelligent act actually. Intelligent person will definitely seek help. And seeking help whom? Just pray. And you can ask, how do you say prayer is efficacious? What is the basis for saying prayer is efficacious? I tell you, we are going to study the law of action, law of karma, elaborately in our following classes. But today I can tell you in one sentence, what is law of action? According to law of action, no action can go without producing a result. And what is prayer? Prayer is an action. What action is it? It is a will-involved action. It is a will-involved auto-suggestion. Prayer is a will-involved auto-suggestion. Why do you say it's a prayer is a will-involved auto-suggestion? Because we know very well, even though we do not know what the truth is, now we are still ignorant. We do not know what the self is. We do not know actually what is the content of I. Therefore, we do not know what is the content of everything here. What is the truth of the universe? We do not know. But still, we can understand is one thing. The truth is one, and the whole universe is manifestation of that only truth means the whole universe is the truth only. We do not know what the truth is. Therefore, the whole universe is, we can say, the Lord. If you say the whole universe is the Lord, everything that is here is the truth, everything that is here is the Lord. But it is a fact. All that is here is the Lord, the reality, the truth. If all that is here is only the Lord, the reality, the truth, this is a fact to be understood, which we are going to understand in due course of time. This is a fact. And here, where are we? We are also part of the whole cosmos, the Lord. Therefore, we are not outside of the Lord, the whole. Therefore, when you pray to the Lord is inclusive of you, the individual, the one who is praying to. The Lord who is prayed to is the whole, which is inclusive of you, the individual, the one who is praying. Therefore, prayer is a will-involved auto-suggestion. It is a deliberate action. As an action, it does not go without producing a result. It is highly efficacious. You have understand this fact, remember this fact, and have unflinching faith in prayer, and pray and have, you know, enjoy the benefit of prayer. It will help you. Prayer is very important. Now, we don't need to go to counselors. We don't need to go to psychotherapists and psychoanalysts. I'm not really making them redundant, okay? I'm just telling you, see, to be frank, in fact, the healthiest way of, you know, protecting your mind from all these things is just pray. Free, at the same time, release good. The best counselor is Bhagavan, and the best counseling is prayer. Pray. Sit and pray. Whatever problem you have, and please continuously ask, please relieve me from this particular problem. Please relieve me. Please relieve me. Please relieve me. Keep on praying. And you will be, whether the problem is solved or not, at least you will not become, I won't want to say anything. You will be protected. Prayer is very important. For prayer as an action, if it is effective, therefore, prayer is the best thing to do. Whenever you find yourself in a helpless situation, whenever you feel utterly helpless, and best thing is, pray. Don't simply, because I have to pray, no choice. Of course, there's no choice, but still, best thing is what? Intensely, fervently, faithfully, you pray, your prayer will be answered. Definitely. Sometimes we are not very clear about what we are praying for, why we are praying also. Out of God fearing, because I'm scared of God, so just to feel okay, if I pray means that prayer I'm not talking about. Understanding when you pray, it is effective. Okay? So as a prayerful person, you are already ethical, knowing the value of values, being committed to live a life of values, you are already ethical person, then you are qualified, no, karma yogi. But it's not just the ethical alone, because you are also prayerful. And as a prayerful person, as a more sensitive person, you also become worshipful person. Being worshipful means being thankful. See, being prayerful means you seeking help intelligently is being prayerful. And being worshipful means being thankful. Being thankful to the Lord for all that you are blessed with. What are all the things you are blessed with? You can see. Your both eyes are seeing, be thankful. You're able to hear, you have to be thankful. You're able to eat, you have appetite, be thankful. You feel hungry, you're healthy, be thankful. You're able to get some bread and butter, be thankful for that. You're able to wear clothes, you open the tap. No, in spite of drought in America, we hear a lot of drought about things now. You get water, be thankful. You were that day, the everything works, gas comes, will open the stove, be thankful. You have some food in the at home, be thankful. You're able to walk to the toilet, you're able to walk out, you're able to put your shirt on, you're able to walk out, go for walking, running, or you're able to see the whole jagat, able to listen to music, watch television. My God, you have to be thankful to Bhagavan for so many things you are enjoying here. There's nothing to complain about. So much you are blessed with. Because small things we don't really take into consideration. We don't at all think how blessed we are, how fortunate we are. Of course, there's so many things we lack. I'm not saying not. But we have to think about all these things. If we tell you, we will become very humble and will be very thankful to Bhagavan because so much you are blessed with. And so being worshipful means being thankful. Say with all humility, we can say, "Oh Lord, thank you very much for all that you have blessed me with, and please fulfill my prayers." Appeal also, isn't it? So being worshipful and being prayerful, you know, don't need to. You may be upset with what you are not blessed with. Doesn't matter. That for we are praying for. But what you be thankful to for what you are blessed with, then being worshipful and prayerful makes you a religious person. So you are ethical, you are religious as well. So a karma yogi is first, he is ethical, and second, he is also religious. And this is possible for one. It is possible for one to be ethical. Knowing the value of values, one becomes committed to, live a life of dharma. That is possible because he knows the value of values. He comes to know of the value of values because he knows the value of mental, having mental purity and steadiness. He knows the importance of the mental purity and steadiness because of his commitment to the pursuit of knowledge. He is committed to the pursuit of knowledge because he knows the value of knowledge. He knows the value of knowledge because he knows what his ultimate end in life is. Therefore, it is the purushartha nischayaha. It is his clear, doubt-free understanding of his end being moksha. You know, his commitment to the pursuit of knowledge makes it possible for him to be ethical and religious also. He is not merely ethical, he is not merely, religious. He is a spiritual person. Okay, he is a spiritual person. There is no way of becoming or being spiritual without being committed to the pursuit of knowledge of the truth. Please understand, spirituality begins only when you are committed to the pursuit of knowledge of the truth. If you are simply prayerful, you are religious. You are worshipful already, regularly going to the church on Sundays and praying and reading, you are still religious. You are singing in praise of the Lord, you are religious. You're meditating on Lord, religious. You're praying, you're religious. You are really, you live as a human being, you have common sense, you live a life of dharma, you are ethical. But still you are not spiritual. When do you become spiritual? You become a spiritual person only when you become committed to the pursuit of knowledge. It is the commitment to the pursuit of knowledge, knowing the value of knowledge, makes one a real spiritual person. So spiritual person is religious as well as ethical, and such a spiritual person is the one who lives a life of karma yoga. Okay, and living life karma yoga means, and he, as I told you last class, he chooses, because of his prayerful attitude, he can choose to do the right, he avoids the wrong actions. Discretion in action is yoga. You know, how efficiently, perfectly he performs the karma doesn't matter. But whether his action is righteously done or non-righteously done, whether his action is right or wrong, that makes his action a yoga. Of course, perfectly done, efficiently done, intelligently done, cleverly done, but still if the action is not in conformity with dharma, it is not yoga. It doesn't become a yoga. Then this person also entertains an attitude, because the end is very clear. Then whatever action he lives, performs, the action is performed with the proper attitude of offering to the Lord. Therefore, Ishvara Arpana Buddhihi in all the actions one performs. You don't need to say, before doing every action, you don't need to say, I'm doing it with the proper attitude of offering it to Bhagavan. If the end is very clear, if you know, I'm living this life to discover the truth. And to live the life, I need arthakamas. And to live my life, to have the infrastructure I need to have to live my life, I need to do karma. I'm doing all the actions I'm doing to live my life. I'm not doing my actions for moksha. I'm living my life for moksha, but I'm doing actions to live my life. If this is the attitude, the commitment to dharma is there. If you're prayerful and worshipful, I tell you, all the actions you do become offered to the Lord. Okay? Physically, don't offer your actions to the Lord. It is the attitude with which we perform the actions, convert the actions into the actions offered to the Bhagavan, and which we convert the action to yoga. Then, whatever situations come in life also, of course there will be situations. All the life is again, if a life of actions means, life is also life of experience, of paths, of opposites. All the time we go through the paths of opposites. The whole life, there will be desirable situations, there will be undesirable situations. Life will never be a life of only desirable situations, or will never be life of only undesirable situations. Life will have both. When situations are there, it is very natural for us not to feel low, dejected and depressed when situations are undesirable. Very natural. Not only, I'm not saying particularly anybody, very natural, any human being. Because we are not strong people. We have no strength to take things in life. We feel so low and dejected and depressed. When situations are desirable, and the same, what do we do? We also feel very elated. We can never remain balanced and same. Either you feel low or you feel elated. Whereas a person who wants to live a life of karma yoga, who wants to convert his life into a life of karma yoga, you know, who wants to prepare his mind for knowledge, for the ultimate good, ultimate best, such a person, whatever situations come, he remains the same in all situations. Undesirable situation comes because of his prayerfulness, because of his worshipfulness, because of his commitment to dharma, you know. He is blessed with the strength to remain the same in all situations. Undesirable situations, he does not feel dejected and depressed. In desirable situations, he does not feel elated. He remains the same and balanced in all situations. Samatvam yoga uchyate. Samatvam is yoga, remaining the same. Entertaining equanimity. Being equanimous in all situations makes him a yogi. Then you can ask, how is it possible for one to remain the same in all situations? It is very easy for us to advise others, to tell others, but when situations come for one's own self, how is it possible for one to remain the same in all situations? There is a secret here. It is possible for one to remain the same in all situations if we understand certain facts about the situations. What are those facts? Number one, whatever situation comes, desirable situation, pleasure, is impermanent. Undesirable situation, pain comes. Pain also is time-bound. No situation is permanent. If pain comes, be sure it is going to go. pleasure comes also, make it very clear, it will not last long. It will go. Because that is the nature of any of the pairs of opposites. Loss, gain, victory, defeat, honor, dishonor, heat, cold, day, night. I tell you, all the success, failure, all these pairs of opposites are time bound. They come and go. Why they go? Why pleasure should not stay forever? Why pain should not go soon? Why pain come at all? We ask these questions. No. Pain will be there. Pleasure will be there. Every human being has both. Has to go through both. The proportion may differ person to person. But all the human beings have to go through these pairs of opposites. Nobody can escape. When all these pairs of opposites are subject to change, which means they are time bound in nature, they are finite in nature, they will change. In Gita, there is a verse saying, Agama apayinaha anityaha. Agama apayinaha means all these, they come and go. Anityaha, they are time bound. They will not be, pleasure will not be eternally there forever. Pain will not be staying there forever. Pain also will come and go. Success will come and go. Failure will come behind. Pleasure will come, go. Pain will follow. Honor comes, highly honored. No time it will go. There will be something to make you feel dishonored. This is the nature of pairs of opposites. If you understand this fact, we can manage. Second thing. And these pairs of opposites, you do not have choice over these pairs of opposites. Why? Because they are determined by the natural laws. You can ask, before doing the action, you have choice over actions. You can think, because you can't say, I don't have choice over actions. You have no choice about doing the actions. But you have choice over actions. You can choose to do the right action. You can avoid the wrong action. For which you need to use your willpower. You need to use your knowledge of values, right and wrong. Definitely you can always choose to do the right action, avoid the wrong. But once you have done the action, I tell you, the situation what you go through in life, you do not have choice over results of actions. We have choice over actions. Therefore, we can choose to do the right, avoid the wrong. By using our willpower, by using our knowledge of right and wrong, knowledge of dharma, values. But we do not have choice over fruits of actions. We do not have choice over our the situations what we go through in life. Why? Because they are determined by the natural laws. Who ordained these situations? This man was driving, he met with an accident. This person came, my God, he was okay last week. This week he's not well, he's in the hospital. This person was very intelligent. I couldn't believe he failed in exams. My God, this fellow was never studying. He came first. He got first. He never worked hard. I don't know. He always seems to be wandering here and there. Somehow he talks something. He makes lots of money. He works so hard, not able to see money in life. Like this, we hear up all these things. All contradictory things, situations we hear about from people. We don't need to hear. We know ourselves. Our own life's experience must have taught us so many things by now. Which means this is very natural. One thing we have to understand, it is a fact. Whether we like it or not, all the situations what everyone goes through is determined by the natural laws. And we should know these natural laws alone determine results of action situations in keeping with our own past actions, which you understand in the following classes. Don't worry about it. Because nothing comes without an appropriate cause behind it. Whatever comes, whether I know the reason or not, I know what is the cause for this or not, nothing can come without a cause. If you see suddenly a tomato plant in your garden, suddenly a small plant you see, you cannot say, my God, I never threw the tomato into the garden, but how come there is a tomato plant in my garden? Will you ask this? Whether you remember or not, you know or not, some seed must have gone there, only then the plant can come. Just because you do not remember or do not know that you sowed the seed, you cannot deny the cause behind it. There must have been a seed for the seedling to be there. Similarly, whatever situations come in our lives, there is appropriate, proper cause behind it. I don't know what the cause is. I don't remember what the cause is. I can't even understand. I can't really comprehend what the cause is. But there is a cause behind whatever we go through in life. And which our scriptures say, the results of our own past actions are the cause behind what we go through in life, but we cannot even understand this fact. Therefore, the results, the situations what we go through in our lives are determined by the natural laws. Therefore, and which means, what are these natural laws? Therefore, we don't need to really blame anybody in the world for what the lot I am going through. In Tamil, we have beautiful sentence, Nandrum Thidum Pirartara Vara. Nobody is really responsible. We may always blame because of that person, because of this person, because of wife, because of husband, because of friends, because of acquaintances. We may always blame others. To be frank, this is a fact we have to remember all the time. Whenever we get so much of anger we have against another person, how can you manage your anger? Because you are 100% sure because of that person, this person is suffering. That person's behavior, you may think. To be frank, no, they are instrumental. The person whom you think is responsible is only instrumental for the other person to go through a situation. Nimittam should not be taken as karanam. Understand? Instrumental. This person becomes instrumental for the loss I am having in my business. He is not responsible. Understand? And then, therefore, why I am going this? Determined by the laws, natural laws. And now we understand, even though the fact we wait to understand, all that is here is only the Lord, the fact is what? The natural laws also are the Lord. We cannot see the subtle natural laws. There are innumerably countless natural laws which exist as part and parcel of the manifest universe. We cannot see them through physical eyes, but we can understand them, understand those laws being manifest. Like how simply you understand, when you throw the stone, it comes down because of law of gravitation. And a balloon filled with air is floating, it doesn't come and fall down because of law of flotation. I don't see these laws through my physical eyes, but I understand the laws being manifest. Similarly, all the actions, everything happens as a cause behind it and determined by the natural laws. Those laws are manifestation of Lord. Therefore, those laws also are Bhagavan only if I can understand the fact. Law ordained results are nothing but Lord ordained results, situations. This is a fact, and this fact we have to remember, try to understand, think about again and again. Then once you understand, then every situation comes in life, we can see it with differently. We can see it differently. We can have different perspective towards the situations. If it is law ordained, nobody is responsible. If it is Lord ordained, then I can have an attitude of seeing every situation as prasadaha, the gift from the Lord. You cannot see it as a gift from the Lord unless you see it as ordained by the laws. What is a gift from the Lord means in India, I tell you, we can never say no. Any gift, somebody comes and gives you, how do you say? Even though you may not like it, but will you say, yeah, what gift it is? Just a chocolate box? I feel some jewelry box, not a chocolate box. You won't say that. A chocolate box or a bunch of flowers or anything comes, still you accept the gift means you're so thankful. Desirable or undesirable, isn't it? A very ordinary gift. You don't say that. You may think mentally, but still you accept. When you receive it, how do you receive it? Thank you very much. So sweet, so nice it is. With, you know, you're showing all your teeth possible. Inside you may not say what gift it is. But still you receive it. No smiling, thanking, making the person feel at home. That, you know, this is how pain comes, gift from Bhagavan. Pleasure comes, gift from Bhagavan. Loss comes, gift from Bhagavan. Success comes, gift from Bhagavan. Failure comes, gift from Bhagavan. Oh my God, failure after failure after failure after failure comes, gift, gift, gift. Prasadaha, prasadaha, prasadaha. This attitude of accepting everything as prasada is possible only if we see that as the Lord ordained. Law ordained. Once you see it as a gift, then you will not say, whether it's a chocolate box or a jewel box or a box with the jewelry. Gold or a diamond ring, doesn't, or simply ordinary box, everything you accept it with the sameness of mind. The sameness of mind is possible only if you see it as gift from Bhagavan. You can see it as a gift from Bhagavan only if you understand it is all that comes in life are determined by the natural laws. Lord in the form of natural laws. And this is called prasada buddhi. This is amazing. This is the most important thing which makes a person's life a life of karma yoga. Samatvam. Samatvam. The person who entertains this equanimity, one who can remain equanimous in all situations, can keep progressing. He never gets stagnant anywhere. He's always a progressive contributor. Progressive performer. He is not a detained, stagnant, you know, depressed person, complaining person. Okay, it is this attitudes. Ishvara prasada buddhi in performing actions. The attitude of offering to Bhagavan in performing actions. In accepting situations is a prasada buddhi. It is these situations really convert one's life into a life of karma yoga. It is this way of life. It's a completely dharma governed life. A life which is lived in conformity with universal natural law and order. It is the life lived in tune with Bhagavan Ishwaraha, the Lord. Living a life in harmony with the Lord is the life of surrender also, relative surrender. It is this lifestyle, is called Sanatanaha Dharmaha, the way of life which will comfortably, without any difficulty, effortlessly will prepare you for jnanam. It will see until you are blessed with knowledge, you can live your life comfortably, make your life very life, smooth life, friction free life. Okay, we'll see next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.